Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic, and I'm very excited to have this gentleman on the channel with me today. He has taken the magic world by storm recently by setting up a brand new production company, which is already smashing it over and over again. But he is such an engaging performer, and everyone I've ever spoken to has said such nice things and how he's such a really nice guy. I can't wait to interview him on the channel. And I am, of course, talking about Perseus. I am talking about Perseus Akramanis. How are you doing, Perseus?
I'm good. Good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the channel, especially, you know, we're filming this and it's like 11 o'clock at night your time. So,
I'm an night owl. I don't mind. I sleep really late at night.
Oh, that's awesome. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Of course. It's my pleasure.
And you've been in this industry for a long time. Like, our paths haven't really crossed that much, but everybody I've spoken to just has such amazing, nice things to say about you. And such an amazing performer, such an incredible performer.
And bless him.
Bless him. And it's true. And I had your book bought for me, Mosaic, which we're going to get into later on. I had your book bought for me at Christmas. And it's one that I've been wanting for a long time, ever since it was recommended by several people, including Eric Stevens. So, you know, you've been around for a long time. You've done a lot in the industry. And we'll get into this a little bit later on, but you've got a very unique style. You've got a very unique approach to performing close-up magic. And I want to get into all of that, if that's okay with you.
I'd love to. It's my pleasure having you here. And indeed, I think we crossed paths at some point at Blackpool. We briefly met each other and then didn't happen. I'm so glad it did now.
And me too, 100%. Well, let's start at the very beginning. And this is a question I ask a lot of my guests. Right. For people who don't know who you are, let's give them some frame of reference. You're obviously from Greece.
I am.
And some of my favorite magicians are from Greece. You know, Titanus is a very good friend of mine. How did you get into magic? What was your origin story? Was it a typical story of a kid having a coin pulled from behind their ear, or was it slightly different?
It's a little bit more ridiculous, to be fair.
No,
because I used to love pulling pranks, and I had a friend of mine who my best friend, actually my cousin, who is also a magician. We used to pull pranks in at stores. We'd get in and we act as if we were fighting all that, and at some point we wanted to up the game, so we wanted to buy some fake blood. And so we ended up in this magic store. I was just riffing through, just checking the hues of the blood, which is the most realistic. And then when we left, I saw him in the train being like a little bit like this. I'm like, what do you get in there? What do you got? And he was like, I bought a book. I'm like, what kind of book? He's like, the guy showed me some magic. And I bought a magic book. It was one of those crappy, you know, really earlier on, just really simple tricks thing. And I remember we were reading it on the way back home in the train. And that's the bug. Just, it's the end of it. And we just keep researching and buying and stuff and trying to evolve together. And, you know, we were each other's critic. And it was really nice.
How old were you at that point?
Oh, I was old. I was in my 20s. I mean,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was late.
Wow. Yeah. That's really interesting because I have so many people on the channel saying, "Oh, I'm mid 20s. I'm late 20s. Is it too late for me to take this up as a hobby?" And I always say, "No.
Nope.
It's really not."
No, it's not. It's all about what you do after that. I mean, how much work are you going to put on it? And yeah. And I hear all those people saying, you know, I started magic when I was 6. And I'm like, oh, lucky you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had no clue.
So when the bug bit and you started, you know, you bought that magic book or your friend bought that magic book, you started to become obsessed with magic. Did you ever look at it as a potential career choice, or was it just, hey, I love this, I want to learn as much about it as possible?
I didn't at first. At first, I was, because I had a job. I was I studied comic book illustrations and animation, so I had a job in a how do you call it, advertisement company, and I was just started doing it as a hobby, just working on it, just trying to be the best I could be, and really after at least 5 years, I was like, you know what, I should try, you know, get some a gig or something, you know, and then gig by gig, you go like, you know, like I like to imagine myself doing that forever. It was a gradual change from an enthusiast and an amateur to hopping to the pro arena, and then in the artistic one, which is a different kind of discussion.
And how long did it take you to go from learning your first trick to going and doing your first gig? Was it years?
I would say, yeah, at least 3 years.
Okay.
3 to 4 years. And obviously I was crap. I mean, you don't have your mind set in magic seriously in the first 3 years. You're all over the place. But, you know, that's how you learn, you know.
And when you first started getting into magic, was there a particular type of magic that you enjoyed doing? I mean, obviously close-up magic, but was there anything that you gravitated towards? I mean, we know you as an incredible close-up performer.
That's my jam. But strangely enough, I started with card manipulation and stage magic.
No way.
Yeah. And I'm going to send you a link of my card manipulation routine. You can put it up a little bit, you know. It was. I really enjoyed it. It was, again, years passed when I used to do close up magic, but the years passed until I do the full rotation and stopped doing stage magic and turned to just close up and maybe a little bit of parlor here and there.
Okay. And then, wow. Okay, that's really interesting. Really, really interesting. So I mentioned very, very earlier on in the introduction that you've got a very unique style, and you really do spend a lot of time thinking about scripting. And that's something that I want to really kind of delve into in a bit. Mm-hmm. But did that come about at the beginning of practicing? Where did you understand the importance of this? Or did that come over time after you started performing professionally? Or
I think there are a lot of things that work together. One is when I started looking magic as an art form, because I grew up in an artistic family, and I dwelled it through music and painting and all that. And at some point I thought to myself, you know, I actually, that could be my vehicle. I can express myself through magic. And then it was a discussion I had with Eric Mead, because I always loved his magic and all that. And I reached out to him years ago and I told, you know, I want you to show you some magic. You tell me, blah, blah, blah. And he goes like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And we met on Skype and all that. And at some point I told him, you know, do you want to start with cards or coins? Because I was really cocky. I thought it was amazing. And I did this one coin routine, this one coin flurry thing. And he goes like, oh, that's nice. What is the belt? And I go, excuse me? What do you mean? He goes like, what is the belt? And I was like, it's about the coin jumping from the elbow to the other. He goes like, no. That's what's happening. What is it about? And this door opened in my head like, oh, I can talk about, I can actually talk about things through magic. I can put themes and have discussions and philosophy, and all hell broke loose. Then I back to the drawing board. It's and again, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. There's this really misunderstood thing, especially among magicians. You know, if someone calls themselves an artist, like they don't have the right to, you know, like your audience will call you an artist or your peers. And I disagree. You cannot accidentally express yourself in magic. It has to be a constant choice, a conscious choice. You need to choose. I'm going to use that as an art form. I want to express myself through my magic. I want to, for instance, my style is like more metaphorical, more symbolistic. I use the cards as metaphors, the coins, the mentalism. Everything has some sort of story, and not story exactly, metaphor, symbolism under it. And that's what, you know, it's a gradual thing to go to that place. It doesn't mean, you know, if a magician is an artist, he's better than the others that just do entertainment magic, all that. He's just different.
Yeah. And what advice would you give people? Because I said off camera, I said one of the things that I love about watching you perform is you draw me in. Like, and I don't see many entertainers and many magicians do that, but I don't know what it is, but I almost find what you say hypnotic, and I feel like I'm hanging off your every word. And that's something I haven't experienced with many performers. I think Eugene Berger was somebody who had that same effect on me. But outside of you and Eugene, I can't think of many other people that have had that effect. Is that something that you can attribute? Is that something that you try to do on purpose? Or is that something
yes.
that, yeah, okay.
I mean, obviously you want to be charming. You want to be fluent. You want to have the word. That's why I like to strip out, write down the scripts to know exactly where I'm going. I also have the freedom to go out of it and go back to it. But I attribute it to the questions of the Sphinx. You're going to see it when you read Mosaic. It is in every effect, I always put three questions up front. A, Eric Rubin's question, what is it about? Which is basically a question about the effect itself. B, why should they care? So even if it's something that I only care about, it's a theme, how can I make them care and engaged and invest emotionally? And C, which is what we're talking about, is why do I care? Because I can show any magician a wonderful sandwich routine I have for couples with a king and a queen. And people might go, ooh, that's a cool thing. That's catchy. I can try it out and have a nice routine in my pocket when I stumble upon a couple. But if you don't actually care about it, if you don't actually invest personally to talk about and discuss around relationships and all that, it will seem non-authentic and fake.
Yeah.
So I'd say these are the, you know, three pillars for me, you know. There should be a theme. You should find a way to engage them, and you should also actually care about what you're talking about.
So for people that are listening to this, and this is incredible advice, by the way, what do they do if they can't answer those questions? So they've bought themselves a new trick from the dealers. Mm-hmm. They've got this trick. And we get told as magicians, oh, put your own, stamp your own presentation on it, stamp your own personality on it. Don't just read ad verbatim what the instructions tell you to do, come up with your own thing. So they're looking at it and they're trying to answer these questions and they can't think of, you know, an answer to any of those three questions. What do you do in that situation?
You have to go back. If you can answer those questions, it means that there are other questions you haven't answered before that, like, who am I? Mm. How do I want to be perceived by my audience? Because if you understand who you are as a performer, what do you want to achieve? Why are you doing it? Because I talk about this in my second book. All of the interviews that I've ever done, they always ask you, you know, how you started magic. Which is a fair question, right? Mm-hmm. But if we dive deeply in that, that's not the important question, because we all started magic for the wrong reasons. You know, someone started magic for the chicks, someone for the attention, someone for the social awkwardness, blah, blah, blah. The important question is, why are you still doing it? Because that shows... A, if you've evolved, because if you're doing the magic for the same reason you started before, then you haven't evolved much. So you need to answer that. Why am I doing magic? What do I want to achieve? What do I want to communicate? Who am I? How do I want to be perceived? Just get into the heads of the spectators. When I walk into the residency, what do I want them to think when they see me? Because that will dictate what you're going to wear, how you're going to walk, how you're going to talk, what are you talking about? These are reasons because why I dropped rubber band magic, where I draw sponge bowls. I love those effects. I love effects, but they don't fit what I want to communicate. And it's, if you have to first find yourself, if you may, find yourself in magic, so then you can answer, you know, so what the effect is about, because the effect is going to be dictated by who am I and what I want to talk about. Because if you're more wacky, more humorous, more funny, your themes can be more loose, more funny, more humorous, and so on, I guess. So I think that if there, the best way to go about it is make a list. Just write down stuff you care about. Write down interesting quotes. Write down something peculiar you heard. You know, our fists is the same size as our hearts. That's a fact, an anatomical fact. Disc, I could use that. And I actually did. You know, one of my routines that they have to keep something in their hands. Oh, by the way, you throw it away is a nice information that resonates about emotion and all that. I mean, keep notes of anything. And at some point, when you're about to design an effect, you buy a routine, you're like, all right, where does, how can I fit this to myself? How can I make, how can I talk about something? How can I express myself through that? Which is not easy, but it's not hard either. It's like a muscle. The more you do it, the more comfortable it is.
That makes sense. Let me ask you a question. When you're talking about finding yourself and working out how you want to be perceived, what about performers like Piff the Magic Dragon, for example? Like, he's one of the top Vegas headliners in the world. I'm pretty sure he doesn't identify as a green dragon.
Like, yes. When... I mean, he chose. That's the thing. He chose. He's like, I want this. He envisioned in his mind. I'm pretty sure. He was like, you know what? I want, when I walk out the stage, people go like, what the hell happened? And he wanted that initial shock. And then he wanted the looseness. And he was the attitude that he has as a performer, which is brilliant. I'm pretty sure it's well designed and well thought out in his mind why he is doing that. It wasn't just, oh, I found this dragon suit, let's try this. I'm pretty sure there is something deeper in the reason why he does it. And a lot of times, you know, humor or emotion, the thing I do, which is more emotional, more personal, and humor, that what Piff does, is amazing misdirection. Amazing misdirection. If you make them laugh, you can pull out a bowling ball out of your pocket. If you make them care enough for what you're saying, underneath you could be passing and palming and doing whatever you want. It will be like hanging from your lips. This is how it works. It's the investment. It's make them actually care about the time they're investing on you.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. It really does. And it's the question that a lot of magicians ask all the time. I see it on my channel. I see it on forums and Discord servers. And, you know, how do I find my character? How do I make myself unique? How do I stand out? And it's true, over here in the UK, there are 100 wedding magicians that look exactly the same. It's like they've walked into a machine, someone's pulled a lever, and it's the same guy coming out in the same suit, doing the same thing, the same lines and the same jokes, and none of them stand out from each other.
I mean, this is something I think we should all do. Just gag yourself and make yourself not use canned lines. I mean, there are a lot of lines that are really well used. They always get a laugh. But, you know, just be honest with yourself. Okay, I'm going to throw this line that has been used 1,000 times and I'm going to get a cheap laugh. What am I actually offering that audience? Nothing. And what am I actually offering that audience of myself? Definitely nothing. Which is such a shame. You know, we have this beautiful art. We're doing the art of mystery. We could make them wonder. We can make them feel. I mean, it's such a shame. It's a lot of times this beautiful art is treated. I mean, there's an old Max Maven quote. You know, magicians took something that is inherently profound and rendered it trivial. That's exactly what we did with magic, and we are the ones who's going to reverse it again, going to change it again through our performances.
That's right.
And I'm sad to say, you know, I think that's where we all hold a great responsibility when performing anything to anyone.
Yeah.
Whoever you perform, your performance might be what shapes their opinion on magic. Why not offer them the 100%. You're not in the mood of performing, just don't perform at all. Just don't, not a moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just assume for a minute that somebody has found themselves, they know what they want their audience to perceive themselves as. They can answer those questions when they're actually putting the tricks together. What's the process look like for scripting a routine or a trick? Because you're a big advocate of scripting material, and you see a lot of magicians, a lot of performers that go, oh, I just ad lib. I've got a loose script that I follow, and I just like to ad lib because I like to feed off the audience and I like to feed off what they say. And I feel a script would make things too rigid. And then you have the other school of thought where it's like, no, everything should be scripted to the nth degree because that's going to be the best way to, you know, deliver the message that you want to deliver to the audience. Is there a right or wrong? And how do you go down the route of scripting?
I'd say the right, for me at least, is scripting, but also getting out of it. Because if you script your magic to the T, you have such freedom to go out of it because you know exactly where to fall back. If you don't script, you're going to end up with a lot of performances that look like, let's try this. You're supposed to be a professional. Even if you're not, you're supposed to be a magician. You can't just improvise everything. I mean, come on. I mean, and words matter. You know, Aristotle once said, you know, if that something doesn't add, it subtracts. And it's the same thing. You know, if I go, okay, let's try this. What does that say about me? A, I'm not sure if it works. Right?
Yeah.
B, the fact that I'm here, this gig, testing things on you says that I don't really care about this gig. All right. I mean, stuff like that that a lot of time might not think about exists. Yeah. Words matter. You know, what you say, how you say it, when you say it, and why you're saying it. This is scripting, basically, for me. And to me, scripting, I like to use metaphors. I like to use symbolism. A lot, when I talk about something with cards, the cards become what I want them to become while I'm talking about it. And the way I go about it is logic, asking the whys. Why is the most powerful question when scripting? You know, okay, for instance, an ambitious card, right? They select the card, they put it back, comes back to the top. Let's start with this. Why it comes back to the top. Okay, let's go to life and find out what can be lost and resurface. Can be a friendship, hope. It can be, you know, you start writing down a list of things that match the theme of what is happening with the effect that you care about, because you can find a lot of things, but you don't really care about it. For instance, my ambitious card is about this. It's about hopelessness. You know, how sometimes, you know, you lose hope and you need to step back as a reassessor problem in order for it to resurface and all that. This makes sense to me, and I built my bitch card around it. Now I have one of my friends who uses a mother's love, you know, which is a great example for a bitch card, because here's the difference: pick a card, sign it, or put it in the middle, snap my fingers, it's up to the top, and you can keep that card, right?
Yeah,
and add two or three phases. Whereas, you know, you start talking about how a mother's love is the strongest thing in the world. So I want you to pick a card. I want you to actually write the name of your mother on it. They do, right? And, you know, in the beginning, your mother is in the top. It's your top priority. It was hanging from her leg. And at some point, you go to school. And there are times you don't even want to be seen with her. You don't want her to kiss you. Then you get sick, and then you need her again, and she's always there for you. And then you move on with your life. You get your own family, blah, blah, blah. And every time this card reappears, it's not their card. It has their mother's name on it. They invest emotionally. You're talking about them and their relationship with the mother. So in the end, you also give them that card. You can keep that. It's not a card with their signature who nobody keeps, and nobody remembers what's happened with that card. It's a card with their mother's name. They remember exactly what you talked about. And they're going to keep that card because it means something to them. So that is my process.
That is eye-opening, to be honest. Let me ask you one question. You get this all over the world. I'll use the UK as an example. You get those gigs that you go to, normally corporate gigs or military bases or really dodgy little pubs, where you go in and there's like 500 people. You've got an hour to get around as many people as you can. There's loud music playing. You walk over to them and you're like, hello, pick a card.
Yeah.
Especially Christmas parties. I mean, as beautiful and as artistic as what you've just described is, and it is beautiful and artistic, do you think there's times where you just have to throw the rule book out the window and just try and get through it as quickly as you can? Because, you know, you start going up to a group of people when the music's that loud and you've got to get around as many. Right. OK, let me talk to you about.
I'd be fair. You know, if you need the gig. Yeah. Just throw the rule out of the window and just do tricks, do visual stuff, do, you know, card manipulation and, you know, entertaining magic. If you are doing well with your gigs and you are in the area that you can actually choose, I don't take those gigs. Mm-hmm. And when I take gigs where I know there's going to DJ, it's going to be a DJ, before I begin, I go like, you know what? I talk a lot to the timeline that I'm going to be here. Please do me a favor and keep the music low because I talk a lot. I don't want to hurt my voice. Then when I'm gone, you can boost it up. You can dance. You can do whatever you want. But I'm going to work in here for 2-3 hours. Keep the volume down. Because, you know, it is my thing. People book me for that specific style of magic because they've seen me somewhere and they want this in their events. So if someone books me, go, it's going to be a club, everybody's going to be dancing, I'm probably going to send one of my friends. Maybe like, no, I'll pass. But yeah, I mean, yeah, obviously you cannot do, because it's like, you know, like saying, you know, can you play classical music to every venue? Probably not. Can you play rock music to every venue? Maybe more, but not everyone. It's the same thing. Yeah. And I'm not a fan. I mean, I do. Oh, hello. I do like to go on. I'm talking. I do like to, you know, being able to be versatile with my audience and all that. But at the same time, I want to be true to myself. I don't want to, you know, because they're completely drunks or party people, I go like, hey guys, and suddenly change what I wanted to do, wanted to express. You know, you don't expect Bon Jovi going to whatever the Scotland and start ringing in out the bagpipes. You know, he's gonna play his set. This is what you paid for. This is him. So it's that's my approach.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And is it something that you have to? I mean, obviously, I suppose the question I'm asking myself, having this knowledge that you're going to try and script everything that you do, and as you say, your clients book you for this type of magic, when you're looking at a new trick that you either want to create yourself or you want to buy from a dealer, do you sometimes dismiss ideas or routines just because you can't think of a way of making them fit the narrative?
Or yeah,
kind of go, well, I'll get it and I'll figure it out later and hopefully something will come to me.
I think the you can tell. You can tell if there is space that you can find something on. Because, you know, they're effective when I see the trailer and I'm like, oh, I can do wonders with that one. Oof, there's so much space for to talk about things because this can be, you immediately just fires up. And there are others that go like, oh, it's very that, I don't think I'm going to make it work. For instance, what's the name of that routine? With a hook?
Yes, the fish hook thing, yeah. I think it's just called hook, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that thing, for instance. When I saw it, I was like, oh, I can work with it, but I don't like the style of it. It doesn't fit me. So I called my friend, you know, Tristan, my best friend, who's also a magician. He's more into that. I go like, I got the perfect effect for you. But, and he actually scripted it and he does this beautiful routine around trusts and all that, which is really fitting. So It is, you know, it's up to the performer, because again, you need to be faithful to yourself as well. Because if an effect doesn't fit my style as well, because I want to be elegant, I want to be charming, I want to be, and some effects are too rough, are too, you know, too funny, are too, I mean, you know, so I shy away. I love watching them be performed, but I don't perform them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, a lot of times when you create, especially magic, a lot of times you have a theme that you really want to talk about, and there's nothing you can find in yourself of your head. So you just create the routine. You're like, all right, I want to talk about this. How would that play out as an effect? And then start working on how, what's going to happen. And the method comes in the end. You know, okay, how can I make that actually happen?
Well, as you brought it up, let's talk about creativity, because going back to your, you know, we were talking about your career, you became a professional magician and became a very successful professional magician, which you still do today. At some point you started creating magic. At some point you started, you know, you've written three books now.
It's one in Greek, one in English, and now I'm writing the second one. Cool. The second English one.
Nice. So you've written a lot, you've created a lot over the years. Yeah. Where did that come from? At what point did you kind of go, you know what, I'm busy being a performer, but now I have this desire to create and then ultimately sell this magic to magicians? Was that as a desire of having another financial string to your bow?
No.
Or was it because you wanted to have an outlet, because you know, you had all these ideas and you wanted to put them out to
them? I had ideas. I had ideas that I couldn't find being done. And I was like, okay, I'll have to work it myself, I guess. I mean, one of my earliest creations, the card cube, which is basically you end up with this little card. It was released with Alakazam Magic back in the day. I mean, I love that. I think cubes are really seductive and really interesting pieces of shape. And I wanted to, you know, okay, how can I make a card into a cube? And looked up throughout the internet if there's some sort of origami way. No. So, okay, I put a stack of cards and start folding, and just actually found my own way of making. Yeah, at some point you end up with a cube, like, oh, I have to backtrack now. How do I do that? And I went back and all that. And, you know, it's other times I remember with my first release with Paul Harris and Titanus, actually. It was Slide. It was an animated TNR. And I remember it was back when the MSN was around. And I was talking to Titanus. And I was like, you know what? I'm bored. Give me an idea. Give me an effect that you want to see being done with cards. And he goes, I want the Modern Art Illusion by Jim Stenmeyer. I'm like, all right, see you in a bit. And I closed down and I start working. How can we make this? How can we make a card go like this and all that? So that's how Slide was created. And, you know, sometimes it's something accidental. Sometimes it's design. Sometimes it's by need. You know, I want to do this and there's nothing out there, so I have to make it, I guess.
Wow. That's incredible. That really is. And for people that want to be creative, because I've talked about this on the channel many, many times. New people that come into magic, they have burning desire to be creative. We do put creators up on pedestals and,
yeah,
you know, kind of worship these people. They've released magic. So for somebody that's new into magic, or they've been doing it for a little while, and they want to be a creator and they want to create their own magic, what does the creative process look like? What advice can you offer them?
Rush it.
Okay, don't rush it. Yeah.
Well, you know, of all people, you know how much crap there is out there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Oh, yeah.
And that if you release something that is crap, it can stigmatize you. It can cut your career. I remember, I don't want to say names, but I remember well-known magicians that were doing well releasing stuff, and at some point they released this horrible thing and they stopped releasing because people go like, oh, now you try to do, now that's not fair, bye-bye, we're not buying from you again. Because, you know, magicians are cruel. I mean, they're not forgiving, not easily forgiving. So, you know, just make sure if you want to release something, A, do your research. That doesn't exist. If something in it exists, take permission and credit. And in the end, try to make it good. Try to make it exactly as you would want it if you bought it. Because, and I can transition to my company as well. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, people are investing money to your creation. People believe in what you created. People are going to get it and they're going to use it. You have to thank them. You have to, you know, you have to give them back what they bought. So it is essentially not rush. I mean, I know people put, magicians put creators in pedestals and they shouldn't. But and that's why a lot of magicians rush to create. I have to create great stuff and so I can be known among the community and all that. Nobody cares. No. Nobody cares.
No. Absolutely.
Yeah. If you want to create, you know, and know why you're creating. Are you creating for the sake of creating? Are you creating to make extra money? Are you creating because you want to offer to the community? I mean, just all valid reasons, but know why you're creating and, you know, treat it with respect.
Perfect. And you mentioned earlier on that a lot of the, what's your catalyst, I suppose, is what I'm asking, for inspiration? Like you mentioned earlier on about scripting and, you know, sometimes you have this idea for something that you want to tell the audience and there's no trick out there, so you create the trick. How do you find inspiration? Because that's the thing that really is the big stumbling block for a lot of people, including myself. Like I've gone through, you know, as a creator that's released magic for over 15 years.
And good magic.
Thank you. I go through periods sometimes where I'm just like, you know what? Maybe the well has run dry. Maybe that's it. Maybe I've got no other ideas anymore. You know, I mean, how do you find inspiration?
Outside of magic.
Okay.
To art, to pop culture, to hobbies, to you name it, outside of magic. The more you enrichen your inner self with other stimuli, the more you will have to talk about and share with the rest of the world. I think it's as simple as that. You know, I love books. You know, read novels, read fiction, read poems. Go to see an art gallery. Go to an art gallery. Yeah, go to a museum, see some dinosaur bones. Why not? You know, just random. Yeah, that's the thing. You know, the more stimuli you get, the more stuff you give to your brain to process.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say that's my inspiration. You know, I like doing a lot of things outside of magic.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Let me ask you another question. So going back to your career, you've done phenomenally well. You're a professional performer. You start releasing magic. You know, I mean, just the fact that you've worked with Paul Harris, you know, and that's just incredible. That's a bucket list item for so many people. You know, you've done Penguin Lives. You've done this. You've done that. You've done the other. At some point, you get to a point where you end up working with Illusionist, which is the dream job for a lot of people. I mean, you know, Illusionist are like one of the biggest magic companies in the world. How did that come to be? Because obviously, you know, you're a performer, you're a busy performer, you're creating magic, but then you're kind of focusing all attention into Illusionist. Where did that opportunity come from?
COVID. So at some point, you know, I still created magic, but at some point there were no gigs. No gigs. And, you know, I'm a fan of Illusionist. I mean, they've done a lot to magic, good and bad. And, you know, it's like every other company, but at some point I remember back in the day, you know, where Illusionists were like the top dudes. And one of my friends, JT Halatsis, who's also a magician, he called me over and he was like, you know what, let's apply for Illusionist. And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes like, yeah, let's just tell them what do we think they need. Because they severed the connection between their fan base and all that. I mean, you know, the Madison years and all that, you know, raising the pedestal way up high. And we thought that, you know, you need to come down, you need to embrace your community. So we applied, they actually accepted. which we're like, oh shit, I need to go. And that's what we did. We did a Discord server, and we did events, we did giveaways, we did stuff for the community, just for the community. And it was, well, I mean, I've obviously appreciated it. It was, you know, during COVID times, it was for around 8-9 months. Mm-hmm. It's done its circle, and then we move on.
Wow, fantastic. I mean, it must have been a great experience doing
the It was. It was a great experience. It was, you know, eye-opening in many ways. And I'll always be going to be grateful about that opportunity. But, you know, you have to move forward, right?
Mm-hmm. Which brings us to you setting up your own production company, mm-hmm. which is a huge, big leap. Did that come from working with Illusionist and kind of going, well, you know what, I think I could do this? Or did it come from a desire of, you know, like wanting to, you know, but how, what, I suppose the question I'm asking is, why did you decide, you know, during a pandemic, because the pandemic's not completely over, we're still kind of
in. Yeah. Yeah, it's not an ideal time to do such moves.
And you decided to set up your own production company in the middle of a pandemic.
Working with E was the final block in my head, because in my mind, I am a customer, I am a performer, I am an artist who releases stuff. I have worked with a company and see some of the workings. So in my mind, I have all perspectives of how to build a company and how to run it. Now, this is yet to be seen, obviously, if I'm right or wrong. But, you know, in my mind, I know what I would like as a customer. I know what treatment I would like as a releasing artist. And I know how, you know, things should go for a company in order for the customer and the artist and everyone to be, you know, happy and appreciative. And in the end, I adore magic.
Yeah.
So I'm still going to be doing that. I'm going to be, you know, clear upfront. And I will honestly try with my criteria to put out good practical magic that people will use. Because, you know, again, people are investing their money and their time to your products. So you have to give them back.
Yeah, I completely agree. 100%.
Yeah.
And already you've not really been around for that long. You know, you're a very fledgling, very young company, and you've already attracted some huge names to come and work with you.
Yeah, a month.
in a month, you've got people like Alan Rorison, you've got people like Eric Stevens. I mean...
Yeah, I'm talking with Amar, Mike Amar. We're going to probably release something together.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's again, it's honest. You know, I'm not saying to anyone that I'm this big hotshot company. I am me. I'm the company. So I'm gonna do whatever it takes for each and every product. You know, when artists trust me with their creation, I'm gonna treat it as if it was mine. And that's why the handmade, hand drawn boxes. That's why the extra booklet with illustrations in each product. I want it to be worth. I mean, and obviously I like practical magic and magic, because as a worker, I want magic that people will buy and going to use. It's not going to be like, oh, I'm just going to use it on Instagram. That's it. It's actually practical magic that you can use out in the real world.
That's great. That's awesome. and if people want to work with you, are you open to having other artists?
Absolutely.
And what sort of thing are you looking for? Because different production companies have different sort of criteria. I mean, myself, you know, I've worked with most companies, and I look at a trick and I can immediately kind of look at it and go, you know what? That feels like an Alakazam trick. This one, this feels like a trick that Penguin should have. And every production company has a kind of... 1914 is a perfect example, who are also a fledgling young company. I know...
They're doing great.
Oh, D smashed it out of the park.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And has created a fantastic brand, like in a very short period of time. But D has certain parallels to you. I mean, I know D personally. I've worked with him, you know, now for about a year.
He's and a great guy.
He reminds me of you in many, many ways, in that he's been around the industry for a long time. He's been a performer. He's been a creator. He's worked for various different production companies.
Yeah.
And he's gone, right, okay, I have all this experience. I have all this knowledge. I now know how I want to do this myself, and I have certain things that I want to achieve that I don't think anyone else is doing. Yeah. So the only way to do it is do it myself. And that's very similar to what you're doing. And I see a parallel between you and
absolutely. I love D, and he has my utmost respect. And I mean, yeah, you can see there are paths are parallel. I think with me, I mean, I think compare the two. I mean, I think D is more into mentalism and the esoteric kind of magic and mentalism, whereas I am more, again, I need practical things, I need visual things, I need stuff that people will use and a worker would use in a regular gig in a residency. And so I'm looking for tested things. So I don't want someone to come and see, oh, I did this, and I think it will work like this. Okay, go out, perform it 300 times, and come back then. See if it actually works. Because, you know, a lot of times, you know, you have this great idea that should work, and then you perform it, it doesn't. I mean, you know, I need workers. I need workers and practical magic.
Absolutely, 100%. So how would people work with you? What sort of thing are you looking for? So you're looking for like real workers, looking for something that's anything else in particular? Are you going to take all types of magic?
Magic and mentalism, yeah, all the way. I love all of it. What I have in my line of products to begin with is, what do you call them? Physical products.
Mm-hmm.
Where some sort of gimmick or gaff is involved, books, and the booklet series that I have. So the physical products is mostly, you know, stuff that you need some sort of gimmick or some sort of apparatus to make the effect. Books, I'm on to publishing book, and I self-published the second edition of Mosaic, and I have a few books in the workings as we speak. And there's this small booklet series that I do, which is routines, theory, mentalism, magic, you name it. And in the end of the year, it's going to be sold as a box as well. Like I will call it the annuals. So because it's going to be like probably 12 every year. So it's going to be a new line of booklets. For the time being, we have Seeing Thread by Brian Crow and Bottoms Up by Perna. Wonderful mentalism, both of those. And, you know, that's what I'm interested in. Fresh ideas. I mean, if you've seen the line of products, it's all weird. It's all products that you're not expecting as a launch products of a company, you know.
You showed me the packaging. I mean, I'm probably in the minority here, but I think the packaging is so important. You know, I
agree.
One of the things I love about 1914 and Alakazam and Penguin is they really take time to think of their packaging. And then you have somebody, God bless him, is a national treasure, but somebody like Jay Sankey, who you buy something off him and it's in a little plastic bag with a piece of paper with a bit.ly link for a tutorial. And it's like, okay, you're right. And you know, that works for Jay. I'm not going to diss Jay.
Oh, yeah.
But I prefer it when I see something nicely packaged and, you know, the care and the attention has gone into it. And you've done that. And is it correct? Am I correct in saying that you hand draw?
Everyone, every single one of those.
Can you tell us about that? Because that's just incredible.
I mean, that as I said, that was what I studied. That is one of my, you know, hobbies. I like to illustrate. I like to draw. So I thought to myself, you know, why not make it a brand? Why not make it a theme? So, you know, when I talked to Alan, he showed me the Cannibal King. I was like, you know, I drew a king, you know, sitting in his throne, holding a skeletal hand as if he just ate the guy. You know, when I did my Medusa project, I drew Medusa. So each product that I will be releasing, there's going to be some thematic, something hand-drawn in the cover. to made just for the effect. I'm not a huge fan of the Apple approach, you know, be like slick and, you know, gold foiled with, you know, I don't like that. I want it to feel more artisan, more warm, more approachable, you know.
That's great. Could you show us an example of something that you've done? Have you got any packaging with you there?
Yeah, I do.
That would be amazing.
Let's
look at that.
This project. That's for Eric Stevens' Cyclops, for instance, since you mentioned it.
That's so good. Look at that.
That's a bottle.
That is something that everybody's raving about. I mean, obviously, you've only been going a month, and you know, the buzz is starting to generate about Orion, which, if people don't know, that's the name of your production company, yeah. Orion. But the one that everybody's talked to me about, and obviously I listen to everything that everyone says, is, have you seen this trick by Perseus with a little bottle? Have you seen this trick by Perseus with this little bottle? I'm like, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, what is this that everyone's going on about? I mean, it sounds...
It's an aesthetic, how do you call it? An aesthetic search, you know, because I always been fascinated with that image, you know, that little bottle and with a little card inside, because, you know, it calls back to, you know, message in a bottle, to being a castaway, you know, where, you know, throwing away something with the hope of someone, you know, grabbing it. And, you know, it's basically my solution to the card in bottle, where you take the selected card and you make it appear inside the bottle.
Wow, that's awesome.
It is. Thank you. It is a really nice aesthetic. It was definitely an aesthetic research. You know, I wanted to make this. I wanted to being able to hold an empty bottle, make a little small card appear, uncork it, and as I pour it out, it becomes big again. Obviously, I didn't do the whole routine, but it becomes big and it's their card, and they can keep it rolled up. And I love that. I love that. It's I wouldn't say card to impossible location plot, because it's not, it's shrunk again. It's their thought. This is a little bit, that's what I was talking about. You know, it's they're strange effects. They're I'd say niche sometimes. To me, I mean, obviously the Medusa project is my pride and joy. I just love it so much. It is.
Well, talk to us about the Medusa project.
So the Medusa project was, you know, when I started magic in Greece, all the old guard, the old magicians were using ancient Greek names as stage names. And my actual name, me being Perseus, I wanted to be different than them. So I started my career with a stage name, like Demon, like something that sounds French. And at some point I figured out that, you know, you can differentiate yourself from them with your magic. So use your damn parent given name. And when I switched, I was like, all right, my name's Perseus. So what can I do to make them remember? I mean, to make an effect out of that. And the Medusa came to mind. Sorry about that.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Okay. So Medusa came about. So it's basically they select the card, and you can actually turn the deck.
Whoa.
The stone deck. Just like that.
What?
Yes. And to me, because a lot of people, and I don't like that because I love Sean, a lot of people put it side by side with the Omni deck. I think it's a different effect, because in the end, the Omni deck is a more of a puzzly thingy. When did the deck vanishes or whatever and all that? With the Medusa project, this is to them, this is the deck, and just transform into stone. It's a different thing. And the sound, it is stone. It's actually stone. You know, you're getting stone props. You get a Sharpie, you get a lighter. You're also getting custom made Medusa coin with a nice revelation, which is actually the Medusa from the cover. So I designed this as well. This is my pride and joy. But again, when you talk about site, I don't want to turn this into a commercial of my company, but you know, when you talk about Cyclops by Eric Stevens, brilliant book test, easy as hell, brilliantly made gimmicks. Cannibal King by Rorison, very visual, very, very different than the actual Cannibal Kings by Roy Walton. I look to produce effects that other people don't produce because they're either too hard to produce, like the Medusa Project, or too niche, too weird. Because in my mind, I think magic is mystery. I think magic should be charming. I think magic should be, seductive. And a lot of the companies treat it as it's super cool and super hip and super, you know, badass, which I don't believe it is. I don't think that's the texture that magic has or should have, in my opinion, at least. So that's the kind of magic I'm looking for to produce and give to the community.
That's great. That's fantastic. And you're obviously, and again, we talked about this, scripting is so important to you. And having a narrative is very important to you, mm-hmm. and having an emotional connection with the audience. And
in every piece of magic.
Mm-hmm. So artists that work with you, if they came to you with a really cool idea, mm-hmm. but they're not as high on presentation as you are, is that something that would you still be happy for them to come to you and maybe you'd work with them and flesh that out? Or
I mean, at this point, I am the CEO, the product management, the quality control, the packaging, I am the company. Come and let's work it out. That's the thing. I mean, my email is open. You can send me your ideas and all that. And already people are sending me ideas and we jam and stuff. And a lot of them are going to be published with me because I it's part of my job, you know, to make so even something if it's not completely done, I can tell. With my criteria, I can tell if I want that, if it fits the line of where Orion Magic Production is going. Or maybe, I mean, because again, someone might send me something that is brilliant, that it works or whatever, but I don't feel it fits. As you said, I feel it's like, this is an Alexander product. Go to Peter. You know, sometimes it's not, you don't feel it, you know? So, you know, by all means, I don't mind if it's not, you know, fleshed out and polished, but I can work with a lot of different kinds of magic and develop them to make them what I would want them to be in order to be released.
That's amazing. I know you're going to be successful. I know you are. I can just tell from the sort of person you are.
Hopefully.
So one more question, which is, sure. And this is a question I ask a lot of my guests. What's next for you, Perseus? I mean, obviously, you're going full on with Orion at the moment and
performing at the same time
and performing. Yeah. I mean, and to be honest, that's a really important thing that I should mention. You see so many production companies where the person in charge has kind of lost touch because they don't perform anymore. I haven't performed for years.
Yeah.
I don't want to name names. We know who, we know those. You are a performer. And that's very important.
I'm always going to be. I cannot not be a performer. I need to be a performer. I need performance in my life. I need to show people magic. And, you know, and in the end, even if I was, which I'm not, a cold-blooded businessman, performance is a brilliant place to test my products.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm not. I mean, I need it for myself first. But I obviously got to test and, you know, check them out. I mean, I had a couple of good gigs during, you know, Christmas and New Year's Eve, and I took the whole line with me, just table after table to see, you know, this works, this doesn't work. Yes, you know, It's because I trust my products. I would never sell something that I wouldn't perform.
That's good.
Or something that I feel it's cheating, you know?
Yeah, I do. I know exactly.
You'll notice when you go to my website, there are only three trailers. The other ones are not done. I don't want to put out a trailer that says something that I want to put in during these days. Maybe when this interview is out, I probably have put a full performance of Medusa because I uploaded the trailer and now I want to have a full performance to see from beginning to end, because I think it's really important, you know, to be able to see how does that look, you know?
Yeah.
Because you can put music and you put a lot of cool stuff in a product, but in the end, show me what the hell you're selling, you know?
Exactly. 100%. And I wish more production companies thought like that, to be perfectly honest. It's been a big bugbear of mine, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
To all of us, yeah. You know, because you buy something, you see from the trailer, you're going, oh, I'm going to use it. And you buy it, oh, I cannot use it. That's not what I bought. It happens, you know? So I don't want people to, you know, and when, because I have a good group of friends in magic community, and you know, people was like, you know, I want to support you, and I told them, no, do not support me. If you buy something from me, check it out first, make sure that it's something that it fits you, so you're going to perform it. I obviously want to make money, but I want to earn money.
Yeah, that's great. That's an awesome attitude to have. What is next then? What you're going full on with performing, you're going full on with Orion.
Yes.
You know, let's be honest, the career that you've had, and you're nowhere near the end of your career, not even close, but the career...
Hopefully not.
Yeah, right? The career you've had, though, if most magicians, if you said to them at your end of your career, you could achieve this, you could achieve the level of gigs that you have, having your own production company, working with Paul Harris, working with Penguin, working with all these great companies, working with the largest, you know, magic company in the world, Illusionist, for a period of time. All this stuff that you've done is phenomenal. You know, it really is. What's left? What's left on your magical bucket list that you want to achieve over the coming years?
I want to perform the Magic Castle. That's my thorn. That's a thorn in my bucket list. I want to have the time to arrange it and perform for Magic Castle. But apart from that, I don't think I'm halfway there. I mean, I have so many more to give, so many more to give. Where when it comes to creativity, when it comes to performance, when it comes to self advancement and, you know, evolution as an artist, as a company, as a, you know, I'm way too young. I mean, I'm almost 40. I'm not that old. Come on.
Not at all.
I have a lot to give. And, you know, I'm writing my second book on scripting, obviously. Because, you know, people love Mosaic, but they told me, you know, it's 20% theory and 80% tricks. We need more in-depth. I go, all right, I'll write a book that's 80% theory and 20% tricks. Let's see what you're going to do. So I deep dive into scripting and the process and how to use your voice, how to use your body, all of that in the second book. So I am doing that at the same time. So yeah, I have a lot in my plate.
You really have.
I have a lot in my plate. Yeah, but I'll survive. I live off coffee. I'm fine.
Well, you know, you mentioned that when you went to Illusionist, one of your goals was to get the company to get back in touch with their fan base.
Yes.
And I know it's very important for you that's the case. So what are you doing with Orion?
To
get in touch with, because a lot of production companies don't do that. You see some that do. You know, you've mentioned Alakazam a few times. That was your first release through Alakazam. Yeah. You know, the stuff that Peter's been doing recently with the weekly, you know, online sessions and the live launches and the Discord server. I think he's been doing a very good job.
Absolutely.
What is there anything that you've got planned to, you know, kind of connect with the magician? Because sometimes I think that magicians do feel that they're out of touch with, you know, Illusionist is a perfect example, actually. You know, there's such a big conglomerate of a company now. You know, back in the day when they first started, it was Brad Christian, you know, on the videos. And now, you know, the only time you see him is when he's going out into the, you know, going out into the jungle shooting a laptop with a gun. And we won't go there. But I mean, the point I'm trying to say is, What are you doing? I know you're very passionate about this. So what is it that you're doing with Orion to try and connect with your everyday magician?
I'm trying really hard, you know, to post regularly on social media something that helps. I recently started the Wednesday tips. So it's just, if you go to my Instagram, there's every Wednesday, I'm going to be posting some sort of performance tip that I gathered throughout the years of being a full-time performer. So something small, you know, something like, you know, when you, the first time post, you know, when you turn out, when you reveal a card on the table, don't go like this, go like this, because that extra thing, that extra time gives you a little bit more suspense for the revelation. Small tips, you know, something that you can grab, or you can be like, oh, never thought of that. Stuff that you, that can help each and every one of the magicians. The other thing I'm doing as a company is, like, with every order, you get a bunch of free stuff. You get, you get some essays, some little nice little essays. So if you bought three products, you get three essays. You got four, you got four, and so on. And when you gather 10, you get a few, a free nice binder to have them all together, like a nice collection of inspiration. And this is something I'm going to be doing with every new effect, every new release is going to have another essay, another essay, another essay. So in the end, you have all that gathered knowledge, points, you know, subtleties, ideas, you know, that you can draw inspiration from and, you know, work on something that, or spark some your imagination to work on something.
That's incredible. That's great.
One of the things. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I am still working on it. So, I mean, again, I'm not a big fan of social media. I don't know how it works. I'm trying, you know, I'm posting here, posting there. I don't know what people want to see, but I know what I would like to see. I would like to see tips. I would like to see, you know, the process, some background stuff, what I'm, how a product has been made, you know, that's what I would like from a company. So that's what I'm doing.
That's great. That's amazing. Wow. I am genuinely blown away. That's fantastic. That's
really, I appreciate it.
Great. Really appreciate great. Before I wrap this interview up, let me, for everybody that's watching this, and I guarantee you that anyone that's watching this is hanging off the edge of their seat. Can you give, to wrap this whole interview up, your best three tips for magicians to that they can implement? It can be anything, any three tips that you think are really important that they can implement to become better magicians, whether they're new into magic or they've been in magic for a while or whatever it may be. Three tips that have stood you in good stead.
Three tips.
And it can be about literally anything.
Okay. I'd say A. Care about your audience more than you care about yourself. Care about their experience. Try to do magic, not tricks. It's a completely different thing. Try to make an experience. Try, when they're gone, to remember that experience. Because in the end, you're definitely going to... I'm not going to digress much, but I got to say this. Fooling them and being... the effect working and being, you know, spotless and all that, that should be the given. That's where you begin in magic. That's a given. That should be the given. It's going to be fooled. It's going to be amazing. You have to care enough to add to it, add more to make it an experience, or else it's just a wonderful puzzle, right? If you want to be remembered, you have to make them care. You have to hit them in the hearts. B, take care of your hands. These are like your face. Do a manicure, I mean, or two. This is your presentation. People will be staring at your hands probably more than your face. And C, I would say, smile and connect with people. Don't rush to performance. When you approach a table, is that your pocket knife? No, don't go like that. Just connect with people. Hi, my name is Percy. What is your name? If you be polite, no one can say no to that. If you ask someone, do you want to see some magic? Yeah, they can say no. But if you ask them, good morning, what's your name? Who could say, no, I'm not interested in getting to know you, polite man. No, no one. Connect with people, then bring in the magic.
That's great. Absolutely
fantastic. That's my, the best I could think of the top of my head.
That's awesome. It really is. Genuinely awesome. And this has been an incredible interview. It really has. I've been looking I've been looking forward to doing this ever since we connected. And I know that you're going to be successful, and I know that Orion, I've been in this industry long enough to know I think your defining characteristic is you care about your customers, you care about magic, you care about your reputation, and you care about how magic is perceived, not just to laymen, and that just comes across in spades. I think anybody who's watched this interview to the end will see just how much you care, and it's that attitude that's going to make Orion a massive success, and I know.
Thank you so much.
I said a year and a half ago that 1914 was going to become huge in the industry, and it has. And I think the same about you, my friend. I think that Orion's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
I appreciate it, man. I really hope it does. And I appreciate, you know, you having me here, and I finally get to know you better, as well as you get to know me better.
Absolutely.
So now we
I want to put at the bottom of the screen everywhere that people can go to find out more about you. So the website, if people want to check out the product range on Orion, where will they go?
OrionMagicProductions.com.
Perfect. And if they want to check you out on your socials, what's the best socials for them to check you out on?
Orion Magic Productions. We're mostly on Instagram.
Instagram, perfect. So Orion Magic Productions on Instagram. That's great. Excellent. And if people want to submit an idea to you,
They can email me on Facebook, on Instagram. They can DM me on Facebook or Instagram, or they can send an email to submissions@OrionMagicProductions.com.
Brilliant stuff. That's great. Either way, and you'll even take submissions by carrier pigeon, smoke signals, it doesn't matter. Anyway, they can get that idea through to you.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Guys, make sure that you follow Orion. Make sure that you follow Perseus. He is a really good guy. Check out the site. I will be doing a review show special on all of your products very, very soon. I'm sure it'll be great. So look out for that, and leave a comment down below. I'm sure Perseus will see it, so leave a comment down below, let me know what you think. I'll be back again tomorrow with another couple of videos, but once more time, Perseus, thank you so much for coming on the channel.
Craig, thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Likewise. See you again soon. Take care. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV. Or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.